Well, good morning. My name is Tom Berger, and this is the Alaska Native Review Commission. And I'll start things off by telling you a little bit about why we're here, and then I look forward to giving each of you an opportunity to participate. The Inuit Circumpolar Conference, which is an international organization of Eskimos from Alaska, Canada, and Greenland, has set up the Alaska Native Review Commission to review the land claim settlement of 1971. That settlement was a landmark, and Native people in many countries have followed very closely the progress of the settlement that was reached here in Alaska. And now that Alaska Native people are reviewing the settlement, they are watching with interest the work of our commission here. I should add that the World Council of Indigenous People, which is an international organization representing Indian people in countries all over the world, is a co-sponsor of this commission. So that there is a great deal of interest, not just in Alaska, but in the lower 48 and in Canada, Greenland, Australia, New Zealand, and other countries in what you people here in Alaska have to say about the settlement that you reached back in 1971. So I think I should tell you as well that I'm from Canada. I was asked to come here and to conduct this commission because in the 1970s I spent 3 years in the Canadian Arctic and subarctic conducting what is called the Mackenzie Valley Pipeline Inquiry, and I went to approximately 35 villages and towns throughout the Canadian Arctic and subarctic to hold meetings to see what the native people of the Canadian North wanted to do about the proposed pipeline, about preservation of caribou and whales, about land claims, and about the future of native government in the region. So the report that I wrote is one that I know some of you have studied in class, and so you know a little bit about the work that I did there. Well, we're not trying to do that all over again, but what we are doing is holding meetings so that Alaska Natives in the villages and in urban centers like Fairbanks can participate. We've been to Amonik and Tununik on the west coast. We've been to Copper Center and Gokana in the Atna region. We're in Fairbanks this week. We're going to Tanacross on Monday. And then next month, we're going to Southeast Alaska, and we'll be holding meetings in Juneau, Ketchikan, Sitka, Angoon, and Klawak, as well as paying a visit to New Metlakatla. And we expect to spend the rest of the year holding meetings in every region. And that is to find out from the people who live here, well, how did ANCSA work out? What are the things that have turned out well? What are the things that people feel didn't turn out well? What about 1991? Do people want to be in a position to sell their shares in 1991? I think I should tell you that so far in the villages, we haven't found anybody that wants to sell their shares. I always ask the question, but the response thus far has been no, we want to make sure that the shares remain in Native hands so that the corporations will remain Native corporations, and thus the land will not be lost to native control. I think you know that 20 years after land is conveyed to the corporations, it becomes subject to state property tax. People have expressed concerns about that. If in 1991 and in the years that follow, there is a state tax imposed on land used for subsistence, then will the corporations have to sell the land, since subsistence usually doesn't derive any income from a corporate point of view? And then we found that everywhere we've been, people have been concerned about the children born since 1971, when the settlement was enacted. It was a settlement that entitled all those native persons living in 1971 to be enrolled as shareholders in the corporations. But the children born since 1971, and I don't see any of them here, I think we're all over 12 or 13 years of age, and that means those of you who were here in 1971 qualify as native Alaskans are shareholders in your own village and regional corporations. But we found that people have said, well, why are the children born since 1971 not entitled to be enrolled as shareholders? And some parents have said, we've got four children, two of them are over 13, they're shareholders, two are under 13, they're not shareholders. And they've said, well, this is something that we're concerned about. And then we found that the issue of native government has come up again and again, and people have said, well, the Claims Act didn't deal with the question of native government. How do we govern ourselves in our villages and in our communities? How do we determine what is to take place on the land that we received under the settlement? And thus the question of native government has arisen. It's called sovereignty. That's an expression that many native leaders are using now. That goes back to the concept developed in the United States by Chief Justice John Marshall of the United States Supreme Court back in the 1820s and 30s, when he said that native tribes are domestic dependent nations that are still possessed of a limited sovereignty. And that concept you find recurring in United States law. It's been adopted in Canada. In Canada, native rights are built on the basis of Chief Justice Marshall's judgments. In Australia and New Zealand, you find the same concept developed here in the United States being applied in those other countries. And that's another reason why people in those other countries are looking to you here in Alaska to see what are you going to do now? Where are you going to go now? People kind of want to know. And we found that in the lower 48, Indian people and Indian leaders in the lower 48, they're interested in your views. How has this settlement worked out? There's nothing quite like it anywhere else in the country or in the world. How has it worked out? People want to know. My job is to go around the state, hear from all of you, and what you say will be recorded. Jim Sykes is traveling with me, and all this equipment is designed simply to make sure we have all that you say down on tape, so that there will be a permanent record of what people in the villages say, what you people say here at the university, what the people say downtown in Fairbanks tomorrow and the next day and the day after that, what people say in Ten Across on Monday. That's the idea. So there'll be a permanent record, a typewritten record of what you say, and we're arranging for this, the record of everything that's said, not only here but everywhere else, to be sent to the university, so it'll be available here to all of you. And my report, because next year I'll write a report about all this, and my report will be based on what you say, on the permanent record of what Alaska Natives and Alaskans generally, because we've invited Alaskans of all races to participate in the commission and to speak at these meetings, and they have done so. My report will be based on what Alaska Natives have said to me, and then my report will be made public in the summer of 1985. Well, I hope we can proceed in an informal way. I hope that you don't mind when you are going to make your presentation, coming up and sitting down at one of the microphones. That enables us to get it all down on tape, and but please feel free to come and be seated. Nobody has to stand, and treat this as addressing a public meeting or anything of that sort. So that's my long-winded introduction to all of this, and now I hope those of you that are have been thinking about this and talking about it will tell me and the rest of us what you think. The trouble with these pauses is that I'm liable to fill them up by talking some more, and please be seated, and you might just give us your name right before you leave.
I'm doing this to sort of break the ice. My name is Clara Johnson, from Fairbanks. I'm enrolled in the Doyon region. I have a couple observations I've made. I've been involved in beginnings of the land claims before the settlement, and I thought at the time that the way we were proceeding was the right way. I have some problems now with the way we made our decision, I think. One, I'm concerned about the land, 1991, and what happens to the land, that we still, you know, have the land. But more important, I think, I'm concerned that the corporations have split us as a people, that the problem really is in communication between the people who run corporations, even though there are Native people, and the stockholders. And the way we communicate, the way we make decisions traditionally is, I guess, more based on a consensus, that no major decision is made either at in a Native meeting or in a village meeting or in a tribe without pretty much getting the consensus of your elders, of your people, the important people. And the way that corporations are run by boards of directors with a small group of people making decisions and very little communication coming between the stockholders, the people, and the directors, through no fault of the directors, but just because of the mechanics of the system, I find a real sense of disharmony in the way the system operates. And that probably could be more destructive than of any of the things that could come from 1991, because that's something that is within the system of the Native people. And it's very difficult to deal with, I think, in that kind of, in the way we set up, in the way corporations by law are set up. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Hi, my name is Cindy Nation, and I just wanted to say that I agree with Clara. An example is the problems we had within Doyon. I'm also enrolled in the Doyon Corporation. We had problems inside our own corporation. If they would have come to the shareholders and we would have all agreed with this oil refinery thing, then it would have been our mistake, and we couldn't have just said, it's your mistake. That's just one example.
Thank you. Oh, could we have your last name? The first name was Cindy.
Nation,
N-A-T-I-O-N.
I'm Robert Galakpianoff.
Could you spell your last name, Robert, please?
G-A-L-A-K-T-I-O-N-O-F-F. On Alaska, Cook Inlet region. I don't know, I always have a fear that in 91 that we're going to lose, like non-natives are going to buy our stock and we're going to lose control over our land. And that's, I think that's my basic fear there. And this, that we don't have any awareness of what's going on. I think we should have more awareness of what's, you know, our people should know how to vote and what we should vote for, and a better unity, like Claire said, that the corporations are separating our people. We should, I don't know, maybe it's, should have more of a unity between the corporations. And this one person was talking the other day, he said that he thought maybe that reservations might have been a better idea, but then it'd be government-controlled reservations, and he doesn't really know which is better, corporations or reservations. And, but I know I don't want to sell any of my stock or any of my land, because it's for the future, you know. And if we don't get any stock for the children that were born after 71, well, we got to inherit them to inherit it to them. And that's the only way it'd be only native control the corporations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Galakpianoff. I should tell you that regarding the point that Robert Galakpianoff raised a minute ago, that is, what about reservations? We have had some people raise this question, and so what we've done is we brought to Anchorage in February and March for 3 weeks of roundtable discussions some native leaders from the lower 48 and from Canada and from Australia and even from Norway and Greenland to talk about how they manage their land and how they look after their affairs. So some of them talked about reservations and how that has worked out in the lower 48. Some of the Canadian native people talked about the settlements of their land claims that they've been negotiating in Canada, and the Australian native people spoke of the arrangements they're making for preserving their land. So we tried to get some ideas about reservations and some new ideas about ways in which in other countries native people are managing their land and the arrangements they've made to preserve it for their children and their children's children. So we've been looking into that and trying to find out more about it so that people aren't faced with just one or another of one alternative or another. In other words, we're trying to see if there aren't new ideas out there that we can take advantage of. One thing I should say is that if you speak and you decide later on you forgot to mention something, feel free to come back up and add on. No problem with that. The other thing is that I think that this sound equipment allows us to pass the mic around from one seat to another. Does it, Jim? But let's see if we can coax a few more people up to the front.
My name is Ron Silas. I work for Tenant and Chiefs, and I'm originally from Minto. And I have a comment to make about the land claims settlement. Somehow I feel ripped off. I look at this piece of paper where my land, the land that they gave us from my village corporation, I could just about throw a rock across it. You know, it's just this little piece. And I look at the maps that my grandfather made, the land that they wanted. It covered the whole Minto Flats. And then I look at the map, the interior map, and I could see a little yellow spots there where my land is. And the rest of it, when I go out hunting, I kind of have a feeling that I'm trespassing on somebody's land when it should be mine. And then I see little red dots all over on that map, which are native allotments. And I don't feel we did receive enough land.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
My name is Jeff Oates, and I'm a stockholder in Doyon Region. I have to agree with what Ron Silas has said, primarily because of the large amount of land that Doyon has. I don't know if anybody realizes this, but Doyon is the largest private landowner in the United States. They have 12 million acres, and not everybody benefited from the 1906 Native Allotment Act, primarily because of there only being one BIA realtor up through the 1960s in Alaska, and he was based in Juneau. And so really the first people that took advantage of Native allotments were the original Tanana chiefs in 1915, because they were aware of the act. And those people informed, you know, their people of the act. And I think there was probably from the 1920s through the 1960s, there was, because of migration and disease and death, that communication gap, you could say, was kind of broken. So you know, I'm a commercial fisherman, and I utilize a friend's fish camp, and I mean, there's no place for me to really say that I can go here without interfering with state land or military land or somebody else's native allotment. What I would like to see is some of this land put into other stockholders' hands so they can utilize it, because really that's what the corporations and what Native Alaskans are all about, because of traditionally they were nomadic type people, and particularly within the Dorion region, people, you know, really traveled a lot seasonally because of winter nomadic hunts and summer fishing activity. So I don't know. I know some elders that are share the same feelings that I have concerning getting some of this land into individuals within the region, whether that be, you know, a lottery or stockholders buy the land, you know, 5 acres for a fish camp or whatever. But I think this needs to be done before 1991, because if it isn't, you know, we are all fearful of the stock being lost and the non-natives gaining control. And to me, I really don't see how that's going to be prevented. Some of the stock is going to filter out, I think. And one of the things that Dorion has done is sought to look for a non-native person to run the corporation. Now that, you could say, would be good for management, but this disenchantment that was mentioned earlier, I think, is going to be more predominant because of this. I mean, it's just a bad outlook that stockholders have on somebody outside the corporation running the corporations. To me, it's myself, you know, looks down upon that. So I would like to see somebody within, you know, Dorion run the corporation. Now, I don't know if that's practical thing. I don't know if we have somebody that can do that because of the large financial loss Dorion, what happened this year with the $23 million loss. But basically, that's all I have to say. I just wanted to agree with what Ronnie had to say about using the land. And, you know, traditionally.
Excuse me, Mr. Olson, there's just one question. You made a proposal that I just want to make sure I understood it. You said Dorion is the largest private landholder in the U.S. It was Dorion lands that you suggested might be transferred to individual native persons, perhaps by lottery or some other means that might be appropriate, so that the land would then be in their hands under their own individual ownership and wouldn't be lost in 1991 if things turned out badly then. Mm-hmm. That was your proposal,
right?
Was it?
Because my point was that not everybody, not all natives benefited from the 1906 Native Allotment Act, and not everybody had. That was the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, thank you. There's one issue I'd like to raise, if anybody is going to address it. When we were in the Otna region last week at Copper Center in Gulkana, some of the people who spoke said that their corporation, the Otna Corporation, had been successful in many ways, and that there had been jobs made available by the corporation to the native people living in the Otna region. And so some of them who spoke said they thought the corporation had done good work for them. Not all of them said that. Some of them were critical, but that was the view of some who felt it had done a good job. Others who are speaking today might consider whether here in this region there have been jobs created by the activities of Doyon Corporation or by some of the village corporations in this region. If anyone has any views on how that has worked out, I'd like to hear them. Of course, I'd like to hear anything else that's on your mind, but if any of you know anything, have had any experience of your own along those lines, you might refer to it.
Hi, my name is Lena Aksaktarik. I'm originally from White Mountain, but I'm enrolled here in the Doyon Corporation. The reason being is that I enrolled in rather late, before the deadline, December 1871, and I didn't have time enough to write home to the Bering Straits Corporation to get all the papers for enrollment. And so I enrolled here at large at Doyon, and when I was enrolling, I didn't know what this was all about, but I knew it had to do with the land and possibly getting some money, which when Doyon was on its feet, we did receive some dividend checks. And that was a temporary good feeling. But as time went on and things got more complicated for me to understand, and I think that the corporations, the board members, and the people itself are two separate things. There's a, like Clara had said, there's a communication gap. It's the people are standing by themselves, and then there's the corporations with all their rules and regulations to follow, and then the people are trying to place all of these rules and regulations together to try to understand what's happening to them, and it's affecting their lives. It's just gotten really complicated. I mean, our past history was where things were kept very simple, easy for everyone to understand. It was passed from generation to generation with clear understandings, but with the corporations and the people, there's things are complicated. Things are misunderstood by both sides. And that's what bothers me. That's just about all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Muffy McKernan, and I'm not enrolled in any corporation because I'm non-native. And I grew up near the city of Chicago. My father owns his own business. And I feel like I was exposed to, as a child, a lot of things in a corporate structure, in a business world, and those kinds of things, because that's the way my father made his living. And the more I study about corporations and the Claims Act and things like that, and realize how complicated it is, And I think, gee, for someone who has a background and a family who grew up with that and still be terribly confused, what's it like for those people who didn't have that in their background? So as a structure for within the Claims Act to be, to have that vehicle as the way in which the benefits of the Claims Act were to be managed, I would think would be very complicated for people who didn't have that within their background. And so to me it seems like an assimilationist kind of thing that you have to adjust in a lot, in your ways to adapt to what the greater society is saying in order to make it on your own. And that's being forced on the people in a period of 20 years.
Thank you, Ms. McCarna.
My name is Robert Childers. I'm a student here at the University in Natural Resources Management. I'm a non-native, but I have two children who are Nupiaq. And my observation, and I have an observation to give, and that is simply that since the beginning of our country, a little over 200 years ago, the number of corporations, corporate America, there's presently, right now, since the beginning of all the corporations that have ever been created in our country, less than 1% are now in existence. And my concern is that a culture that is so tied to the land and that has existed for thousands and thousands of years, I worry about it being so tied to such an ephemeral structure as a corporation. And I just wonder what the possibilities are and what its futures are.
Thank you for that observation.
Do I have to say my name again? Okay. My name's Cindy Nation. I just wanted to say we have to adapt to a corporate structure, but we also have to take into consideration our traditional ways. We had councils. We went to elders. We used our elders a lot. And now in our corporations, we have no elders. We're not going to our elders. And our elders are asking why. They have the wisdom, and we're not using that wisdom. And we should.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Nation.
Here come
names.
The under-12s.
No,
I'm not.
No, I'm thinking.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Sorry.
I'm Linda Moses from the Chalista region. And with what I've heard from these speakers, I agree with most about communication not being a two-way street between the people and the corporation. And it sometimes, especially in a village corporation perhaps, it brings out a mistrust about the board of directors and the president, you know, all those big people up there, and about what they do and what they want to do, or what is it, would it be for the people's benefit or for their own benefit of their job history or whatever you may want to call that. And I'm one of those people who barely know about what the regional corp or the village corporation is, or well, basically, but you know, the ANGSCA mainly. And people, the native people, I think, need to be more aware of the ANGSCA Act, the Lands Act, the Lands Claims Act, and the regional and village corporations, what it can and cannot do, or the limitations or whatnot. Where is it? I don't know what babies or people born after 1971, with little knowledge, with what little knowledge I've got, I understand that someone who is a shareholder of a regional or village corporation can will that to somebody else, maybe
yes.
In the family,
right.
And therefore give or bring with that the full rights of the previous shareholder had to that.
Yes, that's a good point, Ms. Moses. The point that is made is that shares can be bequeathed. That is, you can write in your will that you want your shares to go to your children. And some children thus have acquired shares, and that's one way in which children who weren't born in 1971 are participating. There are some questions that people have raised about that. For instance, they've said, well, if my wife and I have 10 children and we leave our shares to our children, they will have 10 each, whereas if another couple has one child, they leave their shares to that one child, and that one child holds 100 shares. As shares are bequeathed from one generation to the next, the shareholdings cease to be equal. That is, they're equal now, and they're already finding in the corporations, because they keep records about the transfer of shares by will, and they're finding that the shares are already an unequal pattern of ownership is emerging. Now, that's the way shares are bequeathed in other corporations, and Congress, I suppose, intended that, well, this is the way things happen, and they thought that would be that would work out all right, but
I don't quite.
Maybe Ms. Moses, just pull that mic a little closer to you, because there's some competing noise in the room, and go ahead.
The talking about the shares being willed to others, that in itself would bring out a I think a conflict between holders of shares for those who have full shares and those who have less, like 10 each, and there might be even some who may not have any, and perhaps in the future there would be a conflict between holders of shares and those who do not. And that in itself seems to, in my own opinion, seems to bring out that there'd be a conflict between those people, you know, those future native people. And, you know, it would seem like a create a greater separation between them. And as far as corporations and village corporations are concerned, I don't know, who knows, the majority may be those shareholders or non-shareholders. I just wanted to make that point.
That point is no doubt well made. Holding shares in these native corporations isn't exactly the same thing as holding shares in General Motors, because people in a village are using lands held by the corporation for subsistence. And so, as you point out, if their shareholdings become unequal from one generation to the next, it means some people using that land for subsistence may have very few shares or even none at all, while others have a great many. That's one of the things, and a number of people besides you have mentioned that, and that's one of the things that makes these corporations a little different from General Motors or Chrysler or U.S. Steel. They're not holding subsistence lands in for all the people who live around Pittsburgh. At least as far as I know, they're not. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Moses.
I'm Kathy Moses from Jalisco region, and I just wanted to say that while ANSCA has brought recognition to the natives, which is good, it has also brought some separation among the people. I'm a little nervous now.
Pardon?
I'm a little nervous.
Well, you just take your time, we're all a little nervous. These kids over here are making me nervous.
But anyway, I think Ireland's become square cornered, and that has brought a lot of confusion and and separation among the natives. Like, I could remember a time a few years ago when we went berry picking, and a relative looked up at the hill and said that that area, she claimed that area, and everybody got kind of quiet. And I was thinking, what does she mean by that? Where before everybody was free to go to wherever they want to go. I guess that's.
Thank you very much, Ms. Moses.
My name is John F. Moses. I'm enrolled in Chalista, and I'm from Mimonic. I'd like to say a few words.